The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee! Well, greetings to you, haha. This is the Thunderbolt for October 16th, 2020. And here at the Thunderbolt, we try to find the upside to the downside here on the underside, and beside that aside, we are strolling astride history. Since I will be airing replays for the next couple of weeks, this will be the last new show before the 2020 presidential election. And so I will be sharing a few thoughts on that subject in part two of this week's show. But first, I would like to share some of the pros and cons of hitchhiking. According to Mark Twain, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. And many of our people need it sorely on these accounts. Well, I heartily endorse Mr. Twain's observation. And in the course of my life, I have hitchhiked all over North America, literally more times than I can count. Hitchhiking was a much more common mode of travel back before everyone became so paranoid about each other. And while I haven't hitched in decades, and while I don't know how easy or hard it is to get rides these days, now that everyone has become so paranoid about each other, back in the day, if you were young and if you were seeking a very low-budget adventure, full of educational opportunities and unique experiences, then I would have highly recommended a hitchhiking tour of North America. For one thing, it was very cheap. You could literally cross the country with almost no money. I know because I did it several times. In addition, every day is completely different from every other day, and you never know what's gonna happen next. You often get more life experience in a single day hitchhiking
than you do in months of living on a schedule, doing the same thing over and over again. And another cool thing about hitchhiking is that you can often get guided tours of local areas. You would also meet every kind of person you can imagine, and quite a few you probably could not imagine. And the relationship is quite unique in that it is very personal, as you are sitting in a car with the person, sometimes for hours or even days, yet it is very anonymous, as you both know that you are very unlikely to ever see each other again. And due to that paradigm, I have had people dump on me and tell me a whole bunch of things that probably their best friends did not know about them. But there are, of course, some downsides. And in fact, my last hitchhiking trip included one too many instances of standing in the rain for 8 hours trying to get a ride, which was largely why that turned out to be my last hitchhiking trip. I lived on magic, though, and that always worked. And so overall, the benefits of my chosen lifestyle so outweighed the downsides that those downsides weren't even really a consideration. I am also fully conscious of the fact that I managed to live my life in probably one of the only times and one of the only places in all of human history where I could have gotten away with living the life that I led. In spite of all that, I probably would not have recommended cross-country hitchhikes to lone women. Not for any sexist reason, but because it is probably much more dangerous. Though over the years I did meet two ladies who had done distance hitchhiking alone, both of them explained that a lot of people would pick them up who normally would not pick up people simply because they were women and feared for their safety. Now, I don't have any actual numbers, but I suspect it is much more dangerous to pick up hitchhikers than it is to hitchhike. And anecdotally, I never met anyone who was assaulted whilst hitchhiking, whereas I have known one person who was robbed by a hitchhiker, and a female friend of mine was once raped by a hitchhiker. So I'm not saying that serious shite never happens. What I am saying is that it doesn't happen nearly as often as most people think or have been led to believe. I have picked up hundreds of hitchhikers, and I have hitched thousands of rides. And while I several times found myself in sketchy situations, I only once felt true fear. And even in that instance, that fear eventually evaporated due to the perceived threat, literally passing out from drunkenness. Besides that, sketchy situations often make for a more exciting life. And there's often a lot to learn about both life and about yourself in dealing with such situations. Whatever, hitchhiking in late 20th century America was both a very inexpensive method of travel and a great source of adventure. The best ride I ever got was with a rich doctor and his spectacularly beautiful girlfriend. They picked me up because they saw me playing a guitar beside the road. And both the doctor and his girlfriend also played guitar. And that ride lasted for 3 days, and I ended up 50 miles further away from where I was going than when we started. Part of that ride was in an airplane following whales around off the coast of Oregon. On the other hand, the scariest ride I ever got was the one previously mentioned. This was when I was picked up by three Native American women who were all very nice and very friendly until they started drinking a bottle of whiskey, whereupon they quickly thereafter became decidedly less nice and decidedly less friendly. And soon after that, I found myself literally in fear for my life, as they literally started spewing hatred and vitriol concerning both the historical and the contemporaneous treatment of Native Americans by my ancestors and by my white peers. And one of many crazy aspects to that crazy situation was that I had just recently read Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee by Dee Brown. And so, I could not even blame them. But fortunately, they ran out of gas, and when one of them left on foot to go get some, the other two immediately passed out, thus providing me with an opportunity to make my getaway. Yes, after living a life like I led, I have a lot of stories. For instance, back in 1973, I did a hitchhiking tour of the Deep South, accompanied by a lady friend named Julie. Now, during that trip, we almost got busted for pot in New Orleans, and we escorted a 17-year-old girl home from Florida to Kentucky. And during that same trip, we also got a ride because a guy wanted to purchase a walk-in freezer at a going-out-of-business auction in Santa Rosa, New Mexico. And the gentleman hired us to help him loading this big freezer onto his truck. The guy had also hired a local kid who was also there to help him load. During the course of the auction, this kid informed us that the entire auction was totally rigged. And before the auction even started, the kid pointed out to us all the players. And then during the course of the auction, The kid predicted exactly what was going to happen. And he told us who was going to buy what before that who did indeed buy that what. And the craziest thing about the situation was that the kid said the seller also knew full well what was going on, but there was nothing he could do about it. Then there was the time I got a ride with Outlaw Mark. It turned out that Mark Pollock had successfully escaped 16 times out of 21 attempts from various penal institutions. And that Mark Pollock was in fact an escaped convict when he and a friend, whose name I have forgotten, picked me up at the crack of dawn one morning in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The first thing I noticed was that Mark was a man dressed as a woman. Early morning light and a razor stubble was the main giveaway. And at that time, which was around 1981, give or take a year or two, all those years kind of melt together sometimes, but cross-dressing was still something of a novelty at that time. Okay, I said to myself, this should be interesting.
Could you see him selling tickets where the buzzard circles over?
The body on the plane.
Rarely
did you understand the music.
Have I made the larger understatements to myself or to anyone else for that matter.
So step back on the club again.
Mark's friend immediately explained to me,
"These are the pros and cons of hitchhiking,"
that they had just escaped from the same truck stop where I had just eaten my breakfast. And he further explained that said hasty departure was necessitated by the fact that Mark had been pretending to be a female prostitute, and then he had absconded with a truck driver's wallet, and then he had run away before the driver discovered that Mark was not exactly what he appeared to be. So at the time that Mark and his friend picked me up, I had just got done driving all night, whilst the owner of the car had slept in the back seat, and I was in something of a reality daze. However, as Mark's friend's words slowly pierced my reality daze into conscious comprehension, my conscious comprehension immediately elevated and sharpened by several orders of magnitude in frank astonishment. I call Mark a he because he was not transgender. He viewed his accoutrement as a disguise rather than as a sexual identity. Possibly there is more to it, but whatever. Another thing about Outlaw Mark, as far as sexual identities went, was that he had a small army of women back home in Ohio who obviously adored our cross-dressing hero. For Mark, had an entire album full of pictures of himself with numerous spectacularly beautiful women who were draped all over him as he was dressed in his feminine garb. And according to both Mark and to the newspaper accounts, many of these ladies had helped Mark with various aspects of some of his various escapes. Now, Mark's original conviction had been for possession of marijuana. All of his subsequent charges, including a conviction carrying a sentence of several years in prison, were all for escape, further escapes, and escape from previous escapes that he had already escaped from. Mark explained that he kept escaping because he hated being in jail. Can anyone really blame him? And amongst his escapes was one from an Ohio State maximum security facility. No mean feat. Mark had newspaper clippings to back all of his claims, and one of the articles, the writer for the Toledo Blade wondered to what legitimate uses Mark's Houdini-like skills could have been utilized had he not been criminalized because he smoked pot. I recently tried to find that article again online, but I was unable to. The Toledo Blade's online archives don't go back that far, meaning I probably need to physically go to Toledo, Ohio, and there's probably no guarantee even then. But whatever. During that part of my life, I often spent weeks hitchhiking around the country, just going wherever whoever happened to pick me up happened to be going. When it comes to road adventures, I could go on for hours. On a point that is slightly related to all of this, I recently learned that parents can face legal repercussions if they allow their children to go out in public without supervision. I learned of this when I read a story about a mother whose custody of her 10 and 8-year-old daughters was being threatened because she had allowed them to walk by themselves to a park that was 2 blocks from their home. Wow. When I was a kid, running around in public without supervision was all that we frigging did all day, every day. Whenever we weren't in school, we were running around the neighborhood pretty much all the time. And if I ever left the audio range of the whistle that my stepmother used to summon me, then the rule was that I had to inform my stepmother that I was going somewhere. Whereupon she simply told me what time I was to be home. And otherwise, I pretty much went anywhere that I wanted to go, pretty much any time that I wanted to go there. And frankly, I cannot imagine having to grow up in any other manner. Yes, I spent my childhood mostly engaged either playing with other kids or in exploratory adventures. If kids aren't even allowed to walk 2 blocks to the friggin' park these days, then I guess that explains a lot of other things about a lot of other things as well. My guess is that it is very hard to grow up under such conditions and retain much of a sense of life as an adventure and or any sense that while sometimes taking crazy chances can sometimes exact heavy costs, it can also sometimes provide crazy benefits. And kids will eventually figure all of that out if they don't have some freaking adult constantly hovering over them. Yes, it seemed that back in the day, wandering kids on adventures and hitchhikers on adventures used to be everywhere. But now, kids can't even walk to the friggin' park alone. And I virtually never see anyone hitchhiking anymore. I find these changes in our society to be both sad and alarming. I think I've seen a lot more of this world than the vast majority of my fellow humans, and I can guarantee you that our world is not nearly as dangerous as all of you have been led to believe. You should get out and have some adventures. So we're going to take a quick station break now. We'll be back in a minute.
The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. The views expressed on the Thunderbolt do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, nor anyone associated with this radio station. Though I am not altogether clear on whether this applies to their trans-dimensional doppelgangers or not. May need to get some lawyers on that one.
So our president just gave Howard Zinn a big boost in name recognition by labeling him as being anti-American because Mr. Zinn wrote history books from the point of view of common people rather than from the point of view of kings, presidents, generals, industrialists, and other such dubious characters. Mr. Zinn's books are filled with facts you never learned in history class, and all of Mr. Zinn's facts are thoroughly documented. Howard Zinn has been my favorite historian for many years now, and I am very happy that the rump has chosen to demonize him. Though I'm pretty sure that he has never actually read any of Howard Zinn's work. Evidently, the rump doesn't realize that he just gave Howard Zinn one of the best advertisements it is possible to receive. In a similar vein, the QAnon people also gave a big boost in popularity for the new Netflix movie called Cuties. They did that by condemning cuties as child porn. Since the definition of child porn is film of children engaged in explicit sex, I knew that if Cuties was airing on Netflix, then it could not actually be child porn. And so, I'm sure like millions of other people, I figured anything that was freaking out the book burners so much must be a good thing. And so I watched cuties when I otherwise would likely have skipped it, as I'm not really a big fan of teenage girl movies. Well, frankly, Cuties wasn't really a very good movie. It is very cheesy, and a lot of the details seriously stretched my credulity. But it most certainly was not child porn either. The movie is about a group of 11-year-old girls who are educated by the internet. And therefore, they think that dancing in highly provocative manners was what they needed to do in order to have boys like them. And so they formed a dance team. Yes, Cuties does indeed show underage girls dancing in a highly sexualized manner. But the whole point of the whole friggin' movie is that this is what happens when children learn about reality from their screens. The movie, very obviously, does not endorse such behavior. The central character ends the movie, in fact, by walking out right in the middle of a dance contest. Then she goes home and she joins her friends out on the street skipping rope. Not only is there no sex, implicit or explicit, but it is obvious almost from the beginning of the movie that these girls don't even really know what actual sex actually is. The movie was also somewhat naive in that all of the boys in the movie either laughed at the girls or got angry with them whenever the girls began engaging in blatant flirtation with them. In the real world, I suspect that would not always be how things would work out. But whatever. If they want to undermine themselves by tearing their hair out over nothing, and if Donald Trump wants to inadvertently promote the work of one of the best historians that has ever lived, then who am I to try to stop them? As far as funding the things we really need to do right now, there is nearly an endless ocean of cash that we have access to in the form of the Pentagon budget. Now get this. On September 10th, 2011, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld made the shocking announcement that $2.3 trillion, with a T, had disappeared from the Department of Defense's budget. It was simply missing and unaccounted for. Secretary Rumsfeld warned that the tracking down of those missing transactions could, quote, be a matter of life and death, unquote. So again, my little trick to put that number into perspective, 1 million seconds is about 11 days. 1 billion seconds is just under 32 years. And 1 trillion seconds is just under 32,000 years. $2.3 trillion is a lot of money. $2.3 trillion is several times what it would take to do everything else we really need to do right now. $2.3 trillion is Medicare for all. $2.3 trillion is college educations for every American citizen who wants one. $2.3 trillion is enough to repair our crumbling infrastructure. $2.3 trillion is enough to feed everyone in the world. $2.3 trillion is enough to build the best educational system on the planet. And in fact, we could do all of those things at the same time. And with $2.3 trillion budget, we would still have a massive surplus. So Rumsfeld's announcement probably would have turned into a major stink bomb. Heads would have rolled, investigations would have been launched, and outrage would have been nearly universal. Except for the fact that the very next day after Rumsfeld's announcement was September 11, 2001. And so Secretary Rumsfeld's shocking pronouncement of the day before was not only completely forgotten, but with the Iraq invasion and occupation, and with the appearance of connected private contractors and their cost-plus contracts, meaning that when they had a flat tire, they simply had the government not only buy them a whole new truck, but then the government paid them for giving them the truck. And the problem actually grew worse by several orders of magnitude. Yes, people, truckloads of $100 bills that were literally shrink-wrapped on pallets simply disappeared into the Iraqi miasma. According to The Guardian, the U.S. flew in nearly $12 billion in shrink-wrapped $100 bills into Iraq and then distributed the cash with no proper control over who was receiving it or how it was being spent. In 2003, nearly 281 million notes weighing 363 tons were sent from New York to Baghdad for disbursement to Iraqi ministries and U.S. contractors, unquote. So I'm not going to go into all of them here, but the details of the fraud, the abuse, and the complete lack of accountability over anything by anyone seem nearly endless. On, the endless and outrageous patterns and practices that were practiced and patterned in Iraq during this period continued without any oversight whatsoever. So once again, the reporters are bringing to light the fact that the Department of Defense's leaders and accountants have been perpetrating a massive accounting fraud, and that they have been deliberately cooking the books to mislead the Congress so that they could drive the DOD's budgets ever higher. These reporters are also bringing to light the fact that military necessity had little, if anything, to do with anything. So let's see if anyone does anything about this time. I wouldn't hold your breath, though. So what all this means is that it's time to get to work.
But first, some music. This is Ludovico Einaudi and his orchestra. Enjoy.
Thank you.
That tune was called Experience. Before that, we had Ronald's Dream, and we started that set off with a tune called Life. And all of that music was from Ludovico Einaudi and his orchestra, which I enjoy very much. So that's it this week. Hope to see you next week. And in the meanwhile...
Thank you very much.